next matter on the docket is Dorman v. Madison County, number 5-24-1003. And again, would you please identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Michael Lauder here for the appellants Robert Dorman and Douglas Hume. May it please the court, as per the direction of this court, I am not going to recite the facts as I believe they are all properly stated in the briefs. What is key and crucial here is that while Judge Schmidt granted the defendant's motion on all bases, that in fact was premature and that the appellants deserve to be able to conduct discovery. They did in fact plead a good and viable case. First, and I think maybe the most significant issue in this case is whether or not this case was timely filed. And I believe that it was. This court, I'm sure, understands that this particular case was filed on August 11th of 2023, and it was the refiling of a case that had been dismissed by the federal court finally on August 15th of 2022. Now, the first part of this timeliness puzzle is whether or not that suit was timely filed, and I contend that it was, primarily because there was a tolling agreement, which is part of the record, which told it until it extended the time from April until August, 120 days, and that initial case was filed by Ed Moorman in the United States District Court. Now, for whatever reason, the defendants in the case now want to kind of disassociate themselves from that tolling agreement. In any event, that first case was timely filed within the time period allowed. It was more than a year, but it was within the time of the tolling agreement. The federal court case was dismissed as to a number of the defendants on March 23rd, 2022, but at that point in time, it was just an order. It was not a final and appealable order. That did not come until the federal court dismissed the remaining two defendants for want of prosecution. And very clearly, that was on April the 15th of 2022. This case was refiled on August 11th, so within a year under the tolling statute. Now, I believe that this case is timely filed, and I know that the defendants are trying to analogize that this ultimately was a dismissal on the merits, but it really wasn't. It was not a, the only judgment in that federal case was a dismissal for want of prosecution, for want of getting these summonses out. So for that reason, there is, this case was in fact timely filed. Further, we have argued that the continuing violations tolling is applicable to this case because as my parties were trying to find, they were trying to understand what was going on, and these defendants were trying to hide it. And that is clear with a number of the FOIA requests, which ultimately did reveal some information, but even now that information is not, in fact, we still don't know it. The bottom line is that while this is not just a one-time event, as is trying to be characterized by the defendants, but it has been continuing and it still continues. So for that reason, in addition to the savings statute, this case was timely filed. Regarding the various defendants, they contend that there's comb splitting here. And again, this court heard my argument regarding there are quite a few of these defendants that have never been sued. In fact, all of them except for one, and that's Madison County. I would again contend that claim splitting doesn't apply when you're talking about different defendants. I don't think there's an Illinois reported case. I'm not aware of one on that point, which is why I cited Missouri law. But as to Madison County's contention that it's improper claim splitting, they argue an 1862 case of Castleberry versus Faulkner and a case of Levitt, which I do not believe are applicable to these facts. In fact, the Levitt case had a couple of iterations, and it involved kind of a similar type of situation here. And the whole issue ultimately is, do they involve different operative facts? And as I have argued here, is that this is the tort case. We had the administrative law case, and I don't think there are many, I've never known of an administrative law case along with a tort case, along with a open meetings case, that there is a requirement that they all be combined, because quite frankly, they all have different operative facts. Now, and there are a lot of issues here because Judge Schmidt did grant literally all of them. But the conduct of the two prosecutors that are sued, Jennifer Mudge and Thomas Gibson, they claim that there was an absolute privilege. And admittedly, yeah, I mean, the law is pretty clear that if a prosecutor is doing a prosecutor's function of charging and prosecuting cases, yeah, they are immune. But if they're acting as an investigator, there's a whole line of cases, Supreme Court, Imler, and the like, that do open them up. And quite frankly, most of the time, Mr. Mudge was investigating this. In fact, he never charged it. In fact, it was never charged. So very clearly, when operating as an investigator, at best, they have qualified immunity. And I would submit that at this stage of the proceedings, that was inappropriate to grant a motion to dismiss because I believe the allegations were sufficient, specifically suborning perjury, which that certainly isn't something that would be immune as long as it happened while they were investigating, and that's what we have alleged. We did allege that there was a violation of the Eavesdropping Act, and this is where it's been, what I've heard from the defendants is, well, the judge said it was okay. Yes, he approved it, but that's still, and if you read the statutes, that still does not allow those folks that are authorized to do the eavesdropping to disclose it willy-nilly to people outside of the system. There was no reason, and we've alleged that it was disclosed to the Madison County board members inappropriately. And that was very clearly not in conformity with the official business of what the wiretap law contemplates. Judge Schmidt also said that we insufficiently pled a civil conspiracy claim. I believe that we did. Conspiracies are generally shrouded in mystery and can be difficult to articulate, but I believe that we have sufficiently stated that. The defendants also have contended that there can't be defamation, and I do believe that we pleaded publication there at the meeting of the Madison County Board, which we believe these ultimately to be false statements. We've alleged that. We've alleged that they were inappropriately procured as well. And the key is that, and again, they raise immunity here, and I would submit that if this is sufficiently egregious, if it's willful and wanton, that's not something that gets protected by any kind of blanket immunity. And we are entitled to have our day in court to be able to hear the nature and extent of that. The defendants also claim that we have not properly pleaded something egregious enough to stand for intentional infliction of emotional distress. And I believe that we have, in the sense of, for 2 years, this investigation went on. There were all sorts of people talking about it. It was all over. And I believe, and I'll rely on our brief on that point, Judge Mudge's argument that he's entitled to absolute immunity, again, fails to address because, first, we've alleged that they were made with malice, but he wasn't acting as a judge. He was acting as a witness. For that reason, I ask that this matter be sent back to the trial court for the defendants to answer and for discovery to proceed. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, counsel. Give him rebuttal. Appellees, you may proceed. I noticed you're dividing your time, so would you all please, when you start, identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and thank you. Paul Brusati for the Madison County Defendants. May it please the Court. Your Honors, on the statute of limitations issue, I think that resolves pretty much all the claims against the Madison County Appellees. And the issue is not the initial filing as far as Madison County is concerned. That initial filing of August 6th of 2021, we believe was timely because it complied with the tolling agreement and was within 1 year of the, or at least adding the tolling agreement to the 1 year was timely under the Tort Immunity Act. The problem is when the federal court dismissed the Madison County defendants and many others, only leaving two defendants, on March 23rd of 2022 for failure to state a claim, that was more than a year, or more than the tolling agreement, and that was not one of the enumerated reasons, failure to state a claim, that the saving statute applies to. So whether this dismissal was on the merits or not on the merits, it doesn't really matter. It was dismissed. It was dismissed for not one of the reasons that is in the saving statute, and therefore the saving statute does not apply to save the claims. And in fact, the Baird and Warner case cited on page 19 in our brief says this pretty clearly. It says that the period for refiling runs from the date the particular claims are dismissed and not from the date of the final judgment as to the remaining claims as the plaintiff has contended. So on March 23rd of 2022, when the federal court dismissed the claims against, I think, 20 of the defendants, including all of the Madison County appellees, for failure to state a claim, the appellants were prohibited from refiling and the statute of limitations bars their claim unless the continuing violations doctrine applies. And as to that, the continuing violations doctrine applies or looks at the injury pled. What is the injury pled? The injury here is a termination. It's a discrete event. If you look at the claims and the relief and the final few paragraphs of the claims, it notes that the conduct that is alleged in the claims led to or brought about the appellant's termination. Therefore, these FOIA requests, which I don't believe are even mentioned in the complaint, are not the injury pled. And even if one FOIA request was mentioned, each FOIA request and denial would be a discrete injury. It's not a continuing injury that tolls the statute of limitations every time an individual party files a FOIA request. And therefore, the continuing violations doctrine also does not save these claims. And very briefly, as to the prosecutors, Ms. Mudge and Mr. Gibbons, there is no allegation in the complaint that they manufactured evidence. There are no facts alleged. The paragraphs that are mentioned are paragraphs 35, 36, 37, and 44, is what the appellants cite. In none of those paragraphs does it mention that none of those paragraphs mention Ms. Mudge at all. They mention Mr. Gibbons, but they do not raise any facts to show that and either of them manufactured evidence, and we'd ask that this court affirm the judgment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors. Hannah Lindley on behalf of Christopher Schlesser and Patrick McRae. May it please the court.
I cannot hear you.
Oh, so sorry. Hannah Lindley on behalf of Christopher Schlesser and Patrick McRae. May it please the court. We join Madison County defendants in requesting that this court affirm the trial court rulings. Specifically as to Schlesser and McRae, the tolling agreement does not apply to the claims against them. They did not negotiate the terms of the tolling agreement. They did not sign the tolling agreement. They were not parties to that agreement. So to the extent that appellates are alleging that Schlesser and McRae's conduct was outside the scope of their employment, the tolling agreement does not apply to the claims against them. As such, the initial case that was filed on August 6, 2021, was not timely filed, and therefore the saving statute does not apply to these claims. Ultimately, I think that this case really boils down to the fact that the complaint's factual allegations are poorly pled. The complaint is 90 pages, but cannot or plaintiffs don't know specific facts that go to the essential elements of many of their claims. They can't allege or they don't know what defendant took what action to induce the alleged breach of their written employment contracts. They don't know really any specifics or they don't allege any specifics about the labeled Schlesser over here. They don't know what the recording was of, who or what was the subject of the recorded conversation, or who disclosed it. They don't know which defendants or even if the defendants agreed to conspire against them to have them fired, or what actions were taken in furtherance of that alleged conspiracy. And they don't know what specific defamatory statements were made and by who. In conclusion, the complaint was properly dismissed by the trial court. This court should affirm. If there are no other questions, I think we'll stand on the remainder of our brief. Thank you for your time.
No other questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, ma'am. Police court. My name is Anthony Panucci. I'm representing the appellees, Mr. Vichesh, I know I butchered his name, I apologize, Jeff Connor, and John Lincoln. We fully agree with my colleagues' arguments and join them. This case was properly dismissed on statute of limitations grounds for two reasons. One, the basis of the dismissal from the federal court for failure to state a claim in March of 2022 is not an enumerated reason in the saving statute. The saving statute does not apply. And the second reason is because the the statute of limitations argument. We've also, in our briefing, listed out several alternative reasons why the court should affirm the dismissal on all the counts against my clients. And if there are any questions, we'll rest on our brief. Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. John Gilberts on behalf of retired Chief Judge William A. Mudge. Your Honors, Judge Mudge's position in this case is pretty straightforward. Judge Schmidt got it right that everything pled in this complaint, regardless of the conclusory allegations of the plaintiffs, arose from Judge Mudge's position as Chief Circuit Judge. As a result, he is immune from liability in his judicial capacity because everything alleged against him arose out of his judicial function. As our cases in the brief cited, even his administrative functions are covered by judicial immunity. His interview with the task force was covered under the immunity of reporting crimes to law enforcement, but also as part of his role as chief judge based upon the knowledge he had of the allegations that were about which he was being interviewed. Now, the plaintiffs say that, well, he's also involved in some things that were not, at least they seem to argue, that were not part of his judicial responsibilities or within the capacity as a judge, which we, of course, disagree with. But even if the exceptions to judicial immunity apply, the plaintiffs have not actually contested before this court that Judge Mudge should have been sued in the court of claims because as a circuit judge, he is a state employee. And for tort claims, he has to be sued in the court of claims as a state employee under the State Immunity Act and also under the Court of Claims Act. So it's our position that this court should affirm Judge Schmidt on his well-reasoned opinion that Judge Mudge was entitled to judicial immunity, and even if not, he had to be sued in the court of claims, which was not pursued. So thank you, Your Honors.
Questions?
No.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding the tolling agreement, I think it's clear if you read that, that it applies to not just Madison County, but also its agents, servants, and employees, which I think would cover all of the entities and individuals involved, specifically Mr. Slusser, who was working for Madison County at the time. Regarding whether the saving statute applies or not, I do believe that we're kind of in an area where it is not clear because that initial judgment was not, it wasn't a judgment, it was just an order. It was a dismissal, but the case remained and then was ultimately dismissed for want of prosecution, which is applicable under the saving statute. Regarding Judge Mudge's claim that this should have been brought in court of claims, I believe my brief addresses that, which is if egregious enough allegations are made, it does not have to be in the court of claims. In other words, that takes it out of the court of claims. In any event, what I heard from all three or four of the folks arguing is that the complaint wasn't sufficiently pleaded. I have pleaded that as best I can. Conspiracies are difficult. I have alleged as much as I possibly can. I think that ultimately this complaint does pass muster in terms of the allegations. I believe that all the legal arguments fall away and that we should be allowed to proceed. Thank you.
No questions.
No questions. All right. Thank you, counsel. We will take this matter under advisement and issue a ruling in due course. Thank you.